This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We have renowned scientists, programmers who are going to be coming to Zimbabwe to share their knowledge and information on current HIV diagnostics and treatments.
That was Dr. Bernard Madzisma, head of Zimbabwe's National AIDS Council, on the International Conference on AIDS. Details coming up. Also, Guinea-Bissau's president has dissolved the parliament. And as the war between Hamas and Israel grinds on, many Israelis are purchasing guns. These stories and more on African News Tonight. Our top story, a member of Guinea-Bissau's parliament says citizens are expressing frustration with President Umaro Sissoko Mbalo's decision to dissolve the legislature and the government. The president's decree follows what he said was an attempted coup to overthrow his administration. Last week, the capital Bissau witnessed an exchange of gunfire between two factions of the army. Local media reports soldiers from the National Guard freed an opposition minister who was detained over graft charges. For reaction to the dissolution of parliament and government, VOA's Peter Kloti reached Nyana Ngbana. He is a student from University Hills of Bo, the University Colin de Bois. Ngbana starts by saying, people do not understand why the president acted.
This kind of decision, they feel bad because they get it like one surprise, because these things happen at the moments when the parliament they continue the work is normal, everything is okay, and then the president call his members this moment he have one meeting with them, leaders. We hear this kind of communication of the president to dissolve the parliament. That's why so the people feel they're feeling bad with this kind of decision. But is that what happened? What happened right now? No one can explain to give you some justify why the president take this kind of decision right now to put the parliament down at this moment.
You said the people are angry about the decision.
Yes, at the moment, to hear this kind of communication of the president, they feel like a surprise. They didn't expect if the president will do it today. And then it's happened. No way. If you see on the face of all of the people, on the rules, at the arm of the people, they are talking about that. You are getting this kind of feelings. They are not okay with this kind of decision of the president.
I also understand the government has also been shut down. What does it mean to the people?
Yes. Are the same. The government will go down together with the parliament. That's why I saw the people scared like this.
So the people are afraid.
No, it's not a two phrase because it's not a two phrase. But just the people are thinking about the features. How president are going to try and then to care about these things and then to organize the next election according to the period. That will be possible or no? There is now the things that people are going to talk and how to do it at this moment.
That was Nyanga Ngbana, a student from University Hill of Bo, speaking with VOA's Peter Kloti. A consortium led by the Rockefeller Foundation has launched a pilot initiative to use carbon credits to retire a coal power plant in the Philippines before the end of its natural life. The announcement was made at the COP28 climate talks in Dubai. In the latest plan to be announced on the summit sidelines, the Coal to Clean Credit Initiative, supported by Philippine energy company ACNI and the Monetary Authority of Singapore, said it aimed to use carbon credits to decommission the South Luzon Thermal Energy Corporation plant as early as 2030. The initiative says its project was a first of its kind in that it plans to make use of carbon credits to finance the early closure. Today, Israel Defense Forces ordered people out of sections of the main southern city in the Gaza Strip as it pressed its ground campaign deep in the south, sending desperate residents fleeing, even as it dropped bombs on areas where it earlier told them to go. Many of those fleeing the targeted region are being displaced for a second or third time since the war broke out on October 7th. The United Nations Relief Agency for Palestinians has said about 80% of Gaza's 2.3 million residents have been forced out of their homes. Also today, the World Health Organization said it will hold an emergency meeting on the situation in Gaza, seeking to get more medical workers and supplies into the enclave. Nearly 16,000 people have been killed in Gaza since Israel began its air and ground operations in its retaliation for Hamas militants attacking Israeli communities and killing about 1,200 people. Hamas and allied fighters also took about 240 hostages back to Gaza during a seventh-day ceasefire, which ended on Friday. Hamas released 110 hostages, both Israel citizens and foreign nationals. In return, Israel freed about 240 Palestinians from its prisons. The Hamas massacre of October 7th has persuaded tens of thousands of Israeli civilians to get personal guns for the first time, and some groups are voicing concerns about the implications. Linda Gradstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Leila Gradsky said she had thought of getting a gun for a while, but what pushed her to finally get one was the events of October 7th, the day Hamas gunmen rampaged through more than 20 Israeli communities and slaughtered 1,200 men, women, and children.
The stories coming out of down south were unbelievable, and the like kind of silver lining to it was that the communities did have guns in the homes that were equipped, were able to protect themselves, and it could have been a lot worse if we'd not been able to.
She came to Caliber 3, a counter-terror and defense training school, to buy a gun and learn how to use it. She bought a Mossberg MC2C for about $1,300 and paid another $150 for the training course. Her first efforts at shooting were not successful, but she quickly improved. Yaakov Tweti moved to Israel from France and lives in a Jerusalem neighborhood on the border of West Bank Palestinian towns. He says he applied for a gun license just 1 week after the October 7th Hamas attack because he wants to protect his wife and two young children at home.
When we saw what happened on October 7th, we decided that next time we need to be stronger and more prepared for any scenario. I always thought about getting a gun.
Gun sales and training at Caliber 3 are up 2,000% since the Hamas attack, says company founder Sharon Gat. He says the procedure for granting civilian gun licenses is strict.
They apply for the license, then the Ministry of Interior Affairs here in Israel does a background check on them to check they're not criminals, they're not terrorists, they're not psychopaths, mentally and physically they're fit to carry a weapon. And if that's okay, then they do an interview with these people, they send them to Caliber 3 so we can check them. Train them.
Israel's hardline National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir recently eased the conditions for Israeli civilians to get guns and announced the formation of additional civilian rapid response security teams. Some 250,000 Israelis have applied for licenses, and only four have been refused, according to the Haaretz newspaper. Women's groups worry that the proliferation of guns could lead to their abuse in cases of domestic violence. Ben-Gvir's campaign to arm civilian security teams is separate from his efforts to increase the arming of Jewish settlers in the West Bank. Since October 7th, Jewish settlers have killed at least 9 Palestinians, according to the UN and human rights groups. But even Israelis who don't live in the West Bank settlements or next to the Gaza border say they're concerned about their personal safety. Again, Leila Grotsky.
I wouldn't say it made me feel powerful, more of it gives me a sense of added protection. Like, I know our army and security forces are amazing, but they can't be there in a split second. And so definitely being able to have that measure of control is important.
The events of October 7th have traumatized many Israelis, even if they were not personally affected. And they say they will do whatever they can to make sure it doesn't happen again. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. At least 50 people have been killed by floods after heavy rain in the Manyara region of northern Tanzania, a senior government official said late yesterday. Severe flooding caused by the El Niño weather phenomenon has killed hundreds of people in Kenya and Somalia in recent weeks. The rains have also left a trail of destruction, ruining infrastructure like roads and submerging towns in East Africa, displacing hundreds of thousands of people. Tanzanian President Samia Suluhu Hassan directed security agencies, the Ministry of Health and other relevant bodies to focus on search and rescue efforts to prevent more deaths. Africa's biggest AIDS conference opens today in Zimbabwe's capital with up to 5,000 delegates from more than 50 countries attending. Reporter Kudzai Zanawashi in Harare has the details.
Dr. Bernard Matsima leads Zimbabwe's National AIDS Council, which is among the local organizers of the International Conference on AIDS and STIs in Africa, or ICASA. He says the six-day conference will be about sharing experiences and best practices in the fight against AIDS and sexually transmitted infections, or STIs.
The conference is looking at issues of leadership in the HIV sector. It's looking at the scientific evidence which should lead programs. And we are also going to be having exhibitions. We have renowned scientists, programmers who are going to be coming to Zimbabwe to share their knowledge and information on current HIV diagnostics and treatments in terms of trends. We are also going to showcase work which Zimbabwe has done over the years in the HIV sector and the progress which we have made. As you are aware, Zimbabwe is one of the few countries who have attained the 95-95-95 targets of 2025.
The United Nations AIDS Program, UNAIDS, set the 95-95-95 targets, diagnosing 95% of all HIV infections, treating 95% of those diagnosed with antiretroviral drugs and achieving viral suppression in 95% of those receiving treatment. The conference is taking place as Harare and other parts of the country are recording cholera cases. Earlier this month, the Minister of Health, Dr. Douglas Mombeshora, told journalists the cases were not a cause for concern regarding the conference preparations.
We have managed to adequately deal with the isolated outbreaks of cholera that were reported some months ago. Let me emphasize that our surveillance system is exceptionally effective.
The minister said security and logistical measures are in place to ensure a smooth rollout of the conference. Matsima says it will be a mix of high-level meetings, smaller side conferences, and exhibitions. Some will be open to the public. Part of the high-level talks include a meeting convened by the Zimbabwe First Lady, who will host fellow First Ladies in Victoria Falls to discuss how they can further the fight against AIDS and STIs. For VOA, this is Kudze Zhinavashe in Harare, Zimbabwe.
Loss is part of Albertina Tamela's life to this day. In 1996, her husband died of complications from the AIDS virus.
In Mozambique, one in four women between the ages of 35 and 39 live with the HIV virus, according to a 2021 National HIV Assessment report. To combat the stigma associated with HIV and AIDS, a group called the Kandilimuka Association is working to help those living with the virus. Amarilis Goli has the story from Maputo, Mozambique. Myra Delal Slett narrates.
Loss is part of Albertina Tamela's life to this day. In 1996, her husband died of complications from the AIDS virus. Soon after she found out, Tamela and her daughter both tested positive for HIV. She says they found out that they were HIV positive and that it wasn't easy to hear because her child was only a year and 10 months old. She says it is hard for a child to go through treatment. Although Tamela tested positive in 1996, she didn't start treatment until 2004. By then, she had another child, a son, who is also HIV positive. Both are undergoing an antiretroviral treatment, or ART, that helps reduce the virus presence in the body down to undetectable levels that can't be passed to others. Albertina Tamela, a member of Kandilimuka Association, says we're doing the treatment as we should, and thank God both he and I have an undetectable viral load. We do it every day. HIV prevalence in Mozambique remains one of the highest in the world. About 1 in 8 adults is living with HIV, according to the National Survey on the Impact of HIV and AIDS in Mozambique, or INSIDA 2021. Women account for 15% of cases. At the Kandilimuka Association, people living with HIV get the support they need to keep going, says Irene Kossa, executive coordinator at the association. Kossa says they work with people living with HIV and AIDS, orphans and vulnerable children. We look closely at what they need, she says, so that together we can try to bring about solutions for them. The association says personal stories of people living with the virus, like the members who shared their accounts, are found across the country. In CIDA's 2021 report, points out that 1 in 4 women between the ages of 35 and 39 is infected. But of those women who know their HIV status, 97.5% are on antiretroviral treatment. For Amarilis Guli in Maputo, Mozambique, Maida de la Salete, VOA News.
3 people were injured after a group of Zimbabweans marched today to shut down the Zimbabwe consulate in Johannesburg, accusing the diplomats of representing an illegitimate government. The group says it wants the consulate and the Zimbabwean embassy in South Africa closed until their native country holds free and fair elections. The attempted closure led to clashes with other Zimbabweans who wanted services at the consulate. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The group calling itself the Progressive Zimbabweans Foundation stormed the Zimbabwean consulate in Johannesburg today, demanding its immediate closure. They accused the Zimbabwean government of winning the elections in August through violence. They said it has no right to post diplomats in South Africa. The chairperson of the group, Lance Mlilo, told VOA they will continue to disrupt services at the consulate and embassy until the Zimbabwean government holds free and fair elections, respects human rights, and stops violence directed at members of the opposition and activists.
Government of Zimbabwe, they don't respect human rights. and they keep on terrorizing Zimbabweans. And look at how many people that are undocumented in South Africa. Why are we running out if economically everything is okay? As well, we know exactly what happened. Those elections, they were not free and fair.
Another Zimbabwean who did not want to be named said they can no longer bear the xenophobic violence they face in South Africa. They want the Zimbabwean government to fix the country and the economy so they can return home.
But what must we do? South Africa, next year they start to arrest us. When you go home, there's nothing to do. There's no company operating, there's no job.
The group of about 50 people clashed with other Zimbabweans who wanted to receive services at the consulate. Three people were seriously injured before the South African police separated the two groups and asked the Progressive Zimbabweans Foundation group members to leave. Nsunungule Mbongolwane, spokesperson in South Africa for Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party, condemned the disruption of services at the consulate.
People are trying to get their passports to travel, and disrupting the consulate is not the right thing. Those who are disgruntled, if they are Zimbabweans, they know their channels of how to express their democratic will.
However, Trustin Ndlovu, chairperson of the Zimbabwe Opposition Citizens Coalition for Change in South Africa, defended the protesters. Ndlovu said they were simply using their democratic right to protest against injustices in Zimbabwe and hold their government responsible. Zimbabwe's ambassador to South Africa, David Hamadziribi, told VOA that he was yet to be briefed on what transpired at the consulate. Many Zimbabweans in South Africa are demanding fresh elections after international observer groups criticized the August 23 balloting. For VOA Africa in Johannesburg, I am Thuso Khumalo.
Border officials in South Africa say they intercepted 42 buses carrying more than 400 young children traveling from Zimbabwe without parents or legal guardians. The official says the children were being trafficked into South Africa, although an organization representing foreign nationals living in South Africa says it is likely they were being sent for the end of the year holidays to visit their parents who work in South Africa. The government says the buses were denied entry and Zimbabwean officials were asked to process them back into their country. The chairperson of the African Diaspora Forum says it is warning parents not to send their children to South Africa without passports or proper documentation, allowing them to travel as unaccompanied minors.
The show at the Denver Art Museum includes more than 30 paintings by Ghanaian artist Amwaka.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Kayla Williams, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.